Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Ben Lieber's here, so it makes everything great. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
What's up, guys?
Did they, when you were a member of the Minnesota Vikings, did they have some sort of spectacle like this down in Mankato for you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to
yeah.
remember. The night practices were number 51.
For sure.
Was trotting down the line at cheerleaders in the crowd at Blakeslee. It is Blakeslee,
Saucy. Yeah, I didn't know that the first 2 years.
They go wild, and you run out and do a night practice. Did you like this, or were you just like, all right, come on, I just want to play games here?
Nah, I liked it. It was different. You know, back in the day, I'm going to pull the old man card. Back in the day when we actually had two-a-day practices and men were men, it was a nice little break from the mundane two-a-day practices because that morning practice, we actually got a little bit of a light deal, and then the coaches just really wanted you to come out and, you know, be as game-like as possible. So it was kind of chill in the afternoon. You start slamming 5-hour energies and Red Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
You start getting ready as if you're going to get ready for a game. And you would feed off the crowd. I mean, it was kind of nice to be intimate, close to the crowd, game-like atmosphere. Every drill and segment of practice that we did was really, really spirited. I mean, you could feel the uptick in everybody's energy level. It was a little quicker, a little faster, a little stronger. Guys would play with a lot more emotion. So it was fun. And then we got the next day off. So that was always the carrot at the end of the stick.
Oh, hell yeah. And it's not like Kevin O'Connell's unveiling the week one playbook tonight. But the thing that I do like about this is it is different. They are specifically gearing things to play up to the crowd, to play up, you know, the one-on-one drills. Everyone wants to see JJ in a sprint against Patrick Peterson, win that battle, catch the touchdown, all of those things. It is a bit of a spectacle, a show, and a performance as much as it is a practice.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, let's be honest about what the NFL is. I mean, college football is basically the same thing. It's entertainment, you know, so it's, can you mix in high production? And for some of these guys, you're battling for roster positions. Can you handle all of that stress, but also play to the crowd when need be? Can you be a showman? Can you entertain a little bit? I mean, that's obviously not going to make or break a roster spot, but the crowd loves to see it. You kind of want to give the crowd something to watch. You want to give the crowd something to ooh and ah about outside of just like some great catches or some nice plays. You want to kind of play to them and I don't know. I like it. I think you guys, as you walk through the crowd, can feel just a different energy here.
Yeah, it's sweet. There's a lot of people here. There's even like standing room only tickets that are above where all the seats are. Ben, from your standpoint, from a player, an ex-player standpoint, you could see a lot more than Nordo and I can see or understand a lot more than we can understand. What's the couple of things you're looking for tonight?
Well, you know, it is a lot of the drill work. It gets really difficult, I think, in these type of environments to watch 11-on-11, you know, big team deals, because what happens is your eyes will just tend to follow the ball, or you'll just see a wide receiver streaking down the field. And I really like to watch sort of the trench play and see how those guys are working. But, you know, even for me, sometimes you get distracted by where the ball is going. So I like the drill work. You know, I love watching the pass rush aspect of it. I like watching, you know, offensive linemen, they know it's pass rush. They know that they're going to be in that situation. It's a little bit of a vacuum. But you just want to see skill versus skill. And especially for a guy like Bradberry, who I think everybody's going to be watching tonight, you know, can he anchor down tonight, you know, when he knows now that there's a little bit of a target on his back. They've been a little bit noncommittal about him as a starter. They're working in other people in that center spot. And he knows that on a night like tonight, the defensive linemen are going to be just as amped up as he is. And they want to go out there and prove something to themselves and to the coaching staff and the crowd. So it is going to be as much game-like for a guy like that as camp has ever been.
And I think who's ever at center is probably, because everybody's on their phone and everything goes viral nowadays, has probably seen that video of Jordan Davis destroying that guy, and they got to play him week two. So,
how about that?
But yeah, as you just said, Ben, that's the one thing. Like, everything's new. Everybody's excited. You know, it's a new regime. It's, you know, it's new everything. Everybody's pumped to see what they're going to do tonight. But the one thing is, like, this team does have a lot of talent. I heard PA say that in Orto a couple of times, and you guys were out here. But, like, that seems to be, from my standpoint, the one job that's kind of up in the air. That in the second cornerback position, everybody expects that Lewisine will probably be the starting safety, first-round pick. You don't take a guy that high and not have him start. But I think it's the center position and who's the second quarterback next to Patrick Peterson. And I still think, as of right now, as you just said, Ben, I think that center position is still way up in the air.
Yeah, and it's concerning because if you can't handle a bull rush, that's a big problem. Because, A, at this point in his developmental career, he's just not all of a sudden going to develop an anchor in the next few weeks before the regular season starts. You know, that's not a technique thing. That's a strength, and unfortunately, that could just be a physiological issue where he's just not big enough. You know, everybody's looking to find these Jason Kelce type centers that can be athletic, they're maulers in space, but then they're also strong enough to handle the anchor at that center spot, and not everybody's like that. So he was our attempt to find that version of an athletic center. It doesn't seem to be working. And from a pass rushing standpoint, if you can dominate somebody on a pass rush, well, then now you've got an edge on them, because you can always fall back on the bull rush. And then everything can work off of that, because now they're going to be extra anchored down. They're going to try to get all their weight shifted to the back so they don't get bull rushed. And then you can start working the edges and start working the speed. So you have to stop the easiest pass rush there is. And if you can't stop that, then you know, you're going to be behind the curve.
Okay, so still talking about the offensive line, but Christian Darrisaw on the other end of this spectrum has been receiving the opposite feedback, that he might just be a badass.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be because of the team so well connected to the NFC West and former Rams. They're very familiar. And, of course, Kwesi in San Francisco, they all know Trent Williams very well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not immediately say he is Trent Williams, but they're making those sorts of comparisons. And I'm curious tonight, you know, when you're looking at some of these one-on-ones, you mentioned, you know, don't follow the ball. I'm going to watch the line.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be moments where Danielle Hunter, just by the sake of who he is going to make Christian Darrisaw look stupid. However, in camp, he's holding his own, and he's whooping that ass. And I'm curious what kind of stock that you can take from these one-on-ones where, I don't know if Daniil's going 100, you want to hope that Darrisaw is and all of those things, but both of them know their starters. Both of them have a lot of they're highly touted, or at least Darrisaw was highly drafted, so there are expectations. But how much stock do you take in those types of one-on-ones where you're kind of seeing this tug-of-war stay right there in the middle?
I actually put a lot of stock in that because, like I was saying earlier, in the one-on-one situations, yeah, it's I understand that certain pass protection calls are like, okay, we're going to run this, and if there's an inside move, you do know that in a game like setting, you're going to have the guard sitting there to help you out. So it's not always just about like, oh my gosh, it was such a great inside move and he got beat. He's also playing to certain techniques. You can say the same thing, and it happens probably more with the cornerbacks and safeties when they do one-on-one drills. You know, a guy will go streaking down the field and there might be a bomb over the top, and you don't realize that the corners, you know, took that guy as far as they're supposed to go. You know, they called some sort of zone. They expect a safety over the top. So it looks like the corner got beat. But anyway, it's all for show and spectacle. But I do think, more so in the pass rushing stuff, you do get a true sense of where you're at. And you are going as hard as you usually can. I mean, it's as close to 100% as possible. Now, you know, a guy like Daniil might come into a practice like tonight and say, you know, I'm going to work on my long arm tonight. You know, I don't care what the public sees or whatever, but that's one aspect of my game I need to work on. I'm going to get that left arm or that right arm stuck out there, and I'm going to work my moves off of that long arm. So that could be something that he showcases and tries to work out. And that's what practice is. It's experimentation. It's what's going to work, what doesn't work. But my eyes will be on that drill because I want to see Darrisaw. I want to see his mauling ability and to see if he's he's been going to be playing consistent, which was a little bit of a problem for him last year.
That's Ben Lieber, Saucy. I'm Nordo, and we're at TCO Stadium in Eagan, Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center. It's the night practice, and we're here until at least 8, maybe longer. We'll see. Peter King was here in town, and everybody makes their rounds. You know that. And his takeaway from our camp is that it was, quote-unquote, a teaching camp, and that nobody's raising their voices. Mm-hmm. And it's all about back to basics. And or at least, you know, everyone's learning something new, certainly no matter how long they've been here. Is that an inhibitor in terms of this team being ready for week one? Do you feel like at this stage maybe players could still be swimming in it behind the scenes? Maybe just the first litmus to let's get through Sunday in Vegas and then we'll know where we're at. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you view the idea that this certainly has been so much more about education in some respects than anything else?
Well, I don't think that's...
Or maybe you disagree.
No, I don't think it's a bad thing. I just don't think that we know what happens behind the scenes as far as are they walking the walk. I think that you can hold players accountable without getting in their face and cussing and spitting. You could say, hey, man, you got to play this ball better. You got to play this coverage better. You might give them one more chance. And if they mess up again, you don't necessarily have to yell at them. You just say, go take a seat. And if that player doesn't realize that by going to take a seat and having the guy behind them take their rep, you're getting punished.
Yeah.
And if that goes over your head, well, then you're not going to make it in the league very long. So as long as they marry up sort of the education piece with the accountability piece, you can be nice. You can approach the game like, look, I'm going to be a yeller or screamer, or I'm going to be a super nice guy and just treat these guys with the utmost respect. But behind the scenes, you better be teaching these guys that this is a cutthroat game. And the level of accountability is, to be a champion, has to be supremely high. Like, you cannot allow mistakes to happen over and over again. And I think as we start to see, as camp goes on, they have to make the first cuts. That might be the best barometer for these players. Be like, oh my gosh, I thought my coach liked me. He was so nice to me. Yeah, well, he may have cut your ass because you couldn't figure it out. That's when I think we're going to truly see. Are we going to hold these guys accountable to being a Super Bowl caliber team?
Man, I was a take a seat kid a lot. I was always the kid on the sports team that they were like, why don't you go to the bench?
Did you ever get timeouts at home?
What? I think the other thing is he comes out into the field that I think a lot of people want to see is just how big of a step is Kellen Mond going to take? Because all we heard was that, and we saw it, everybody saw it, we played it a million times, you guys played it, everybody played it. What Zimmer said about Kellen Mond, about him playing, and how he was like so like negative about it, and how he's like, you saw what was happening, why would I play him, and all that stuff. I think people want to see what he's got tonight. I think that's something that the fans are looking forward to. I am too. They spent a third-round pick on him. Mm-hmm. That's a high pick in the NFL. I think people want to see what he's got. That's another aspect Nordo and I will be watching tonight. Your thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I still think that we need to have a really, really good, solid, confident backup quarterback. And I don't necessarily – I don't buy into this whole thing that Kirk needs – he needs a study buddy in his quarterback room, and that's going to keep Mannion on the field and on the team. Like, no, we want to see a guy that can come in if Kirk goes down for a quarter, two quarters, two, three games, that can actually win us football games and not just kind of – help us, limp along and have us, run all of our points in or have our defense step up. No, I want to find a real number two that can go out there and perform. So, Kellen Mond, to me, this is your opportunity. You are more athletic than a guy like Sean Mannion. It sounds like Mannion is another coach in that room. But all we've heard about Kirk is he's the most cerebral quarterback in the league, almost to a fault. So, What do you need a guy like Sean Mannion for taking up a spot if you've got a guy behind them that can be talented, can produce, can escape, can get out of trouble, but can also process at a fast speed? That's what I'll be watching today. I mean, watching Kellen Mond in college, I thought was very robotic and very mechanical. He looked that way last year when he got in. So can he break out of that robot mode and actually just be a freelance player that can rip it and not worry about mistakes? We'll have to see.
Fast forwarding a little, do you think this team carries three quarterbacks into the season?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. And that's why I think it's important that, you know, we watch this battle. I mean,
they brought Mannion back, though.
Like, I know.
Yeah, like, they had a decision.
Yeah,
they had
Nora brought that up on Saturday.
Where it's like they could have just let him go.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, they could have chosen anybody. So, you know, but we talked about this 9 to noon this morning as well, is Kevin O'Connell's an offensive coach. So whatever value there was in the connectivity between Mannion and Kirk, you know, operating in the Zimmer era, the now advantage they have is the head coach and then inherently probably large significant aspects of his entire philosophy of the team are going to be geared towards number 8.
Yeah.
But I will say this, so far in practices that I've watched and viewed, he is still the number 2.
Yeah.
So he's going to come in and it's Mannion over the middle, incomplete, Vikings punt. I mean, that's still potentially a thing, but he's not really being pushed. And yeah. I hate ripping, you know, it feels like I'm ripping or just laying it on Mod. I want him to kick ass. That's a cool thing. Having a guy that could potentially start games in the NFL as a backup, that's awesome. And it's a rarity. I just haven't seen it yet, you know?
Yeah, and I think it kind of ties into a little bit of what we're talking about with Bradberry and the offensive line. You know, look, if that's still an issue as we get into the season or as we approach training at the end of training camp, is our offensive line is still giving up pressure up the middle, I don't think you keep a guy like Sean Mannion around. Or you know, you really have to look at it from a mobility standpoint.
Good point.
You might need to take a guy that's a little bit more mobile that can get you out of trouble. Maybe he doesn't make the right decision throwing the ball. Maybe he has a bad read here and there. Maybe he's not the most accurate. But in a backup role situation, he might give you a little bit more of a dynamic look versus a statuesque Mannion, who is probably more accurate, knows where to go with the ball, but if you can't get out of trouble, then what's the difference? What's the point?
That's the voice of Ben Lieber. We are at TCO Stadium for the Minnesota Vikings night practice. Almost all of the players have come out on the field. We will go over whatever they are doing on the field. Nordo and I have a bunch of talkers. It'll be all Vikings all the time. It's going to be super fun. Ben Lieber, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.